Yeah, I understand a lot of photographers are afraid of what AI might do to their career or to the genre of photography. And I think some of those fears are real.
Hey, Wiki Hunters, welcome back to the Art of Photography podcast, where we share artists' journey and how photography given them hope, purpose, and happiness. And today we have someone who's very special, and I know that topic around AI has been a lot of conversation. Has been a lot of conversation around AI, and Barry had managed to create something that's truly unique with his NFT projects, as well as some of his photographs that he have taken, throughout the years. So very controversial, very fun, but also very educational for those of you who want to learn a little bit more about it. Barry, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you very much for sparing your time and to join this and share your story and inspire the listeners out there.
Thanks for having me, Sam. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so it's been I followed you. I saw your project and what you've done from a friend, and it's very inspiring to see how you have put together what you have put together. And we'll go into that a little bit later. I know you had massive success, built a big community through this project as well. But before we get that, I'd like to know, how did you get started? You were showing me your very first camera earlier, right? What makes you fall in love with photography and want to do more of it?
Well, thanks for asking. It's a great place to start. I was studying music actually in college, and after the first semester, I didn't know where that was going to take me, and after that first summer, my roommate was an amazing graphic designer, and I had always drawn and painted as a kid, and even from I think my mom saved portraits that I made when I was like 2 years old, and so I had a real sense of like capturing the world when I was a little kid, and that year I sort of changed my focus from music to the visual arts, and the next year I packed up my car in the middle of the night and drove back to Los Angeles. And from school, and decided I wanted to enroll in art school. And so I studied graphic design for a couple of years, and first picked up a Polaroid camera, which was just a revelation for me because I was just the magic of this sort of instant gratification and making an exact replication of what you saw so quickly. It just really took me. And really, from that moment on, I think I was destined to pursue a path as a photographer rather than a graphic designer, and that took a few years to kind of like make its way full time into my consciousness. But yeah, I eventually ended up with the camera, and that was it. Really, never looked back.
That's incredible. And I know you spent past 3 decades photographing youth culture, musicians, celebrities, fashion, and all this stuff. And what drawn you to that part of photography? Because we know there's a lot of different photography in this world. And I myself, I love into the adventure, astrophotography, going out to in the middle of the night to the place that no one goes to. And so I'm interested in what interests you from this path of the photography.
Well, when I first got started with the camera, I was very influenced by some of the photographers who I was studying, like Edward Weston. And he made these beautiful still life photographs that were beyond what the subjects were, if that makes sense. Like his famous photograph of the pepper, it really looks. It's so sculptural. It's such a beautiful print. it goes beyond a picture. You wouldn't look at it and say, oh, that's a picture of a pepper. It's almost like a spiritual experience to look at that photograph. And that was really interesting to me. But to get to that sort of level of technical skill and understanding light, you just really have to go out and take pictures. And so I think, like most photographers, when I started out, I just put a camera around my neck and started walking and taking pictures of what I saw and, elements of architecture and design and things like that that really caught my eye, and where light and shadow were in this conversation together. But the cool thing about photography is that it can be a passport to whatever you're really interested in the real world. And so I was really into seeing live concerts. And so LA being such a great city for live music, I would throw my camera around my shoulder and just show up at a at a concert I wanted to go to, and I would kind of like figure out how to weasel myself backstage, and people would see me with the camera and they'd be like, okay, you can go in here. And so I really started photographing bands when I first started, and that's really what got me started.
Wow, that's awesome, and yeah, that's always interesting to hear where the interest come from. Now, have you ever explored other genre of photography? Into travel, landscape, the very common ones, or even more on the more like macro side of things, or have this always been the type of photography that you just find fulfillment in and never really interested on other, and trying other genre or one?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, for young photographers, I think it's really, really important to explore and to experiment and to really take the camera wherever you're inclined to go. And I think it's also important to try a lot of different things. I mean, I think of, as a photographer, this sounds really rudimentary, but I mean, the first question a photographer has to answer is, what am I going to take a picture of? Because it's such a big world. We go outside and are we going to take pictures of like insects on a leaf, or are we going to take pictures of the moon and the stars, or are we going to take pictures of people on the streets? There's just like the whole world is out there, and it really just depends on what we're really drawn to. And so, when I started photographing concerts, it really turned into a real obsession with photographing youth culture. And at that time, I was photographing a lot of people my own age. And as this, an un connection and understanding of youth culture matured as I got older, the subjects in my photographs remained the same age. There's a very strange kind of, as I get older, like the subject matter is still the same. Which I think is just a really interesting commentary on, like, I don't know, my relationship with aging and the sort of beautiful naivety of youth culture. So that really became my focus, and it's been my focus for the past, it's hard to imagine, 30 plus years. But at the same time, I think if you are a photographer, you photograph like many, many things. I take my camera on vacation with me. I'm always shooting landscapes and pictures of local things, people, objects, still lifes, all kinds of stuff. So I'm definitely one of those like very possessed photographers to just take pictures of everything. And that keeps me very, interested in the world, and I guess, well-rounded as an artist, but the focus of my work has largely been on youth culture.
Yeah, no, 100%. And thanks for sharing that. Now it's really interesting. I want to hear this take from you. How has your perspective to youth culture, shifted, or has it ever been shifted? Throughout your lifetime, because like you say, you're looking at it from a different lens, right? You started off as, you know, yeah, this kind of like friends, and then all of a sudden you're like way, you know, as you get grow older, it's like the gap is getting bigger, and you know, the things that people do kind of shifted as well with the culture and the technology, right? So how has that journey been of youth culture from your perspective, but also from the world perspective, in terms of technological advance, culture shift, and all that stuff?
Yeah, wow, what a great question. I think, you know, when I was first taking pictures, and unbeknownst to me, my focus was on youth culture. Those were my peers, and these were the people I was hanging out with, and the bands that I was shooting. They were all like my age or a couple of years older, and so I didn't really think about it as in that way. I just was photographing my world. And, you know, the truth is, I think as I've gotten older, that world hasn't changed so much. I mean, it has and it hasn't. It's, you know, this pursuit of joy and rapture and this sort of feeling that like we'll never get old, we'll never, you know, we can do anything, anything is possible. This kind of naivety of like, I don't know that I can fail. Like, I just don't, if you don't know that you can fail, really, you have an idea that you can do anything. And I think it's this spirit of youth culture that's so interesting to me. It's so exciting. Again, you know, I didn't think about it so much when I was photographing my peers, but as I've gotten older, it really, there's some perspective that you get that that's really, you really see the beauty and you just see the beauty of being young and having sort of like, you know, your whole life experience in front of you, is, you know, it's really a unique perspective to have when you're that age. And so for me, you know, there's a lot of like excitement and action and love and angst and other emotions that, you know, we have when we're that age. That for me, it's just so exciting to photograph and to capture. And you know, you see that a lot in 96 Degrees in the Shade, which was really interesting, because when people looked at that collection of photography, one of the overwhelming reactions to that was that it was very nostalgic. And so I can speak a little bit more about that, but I don't want to go on and on. So I'll just kind of leave it there. But this is just something that my perspective has shifted. But I think that's only given me more sort of a broad view to gain an understanding of like what that's about. And it just, you know, helps me every day in my, you know, in my practice and now in this sort of like extension of that into AI.
Yeah, have that perspective, you know, as you kind of age and go through more stages of life, you start seeing, like you say, right? At first, it was your world, and then you start kind of seeing it from a third person perspective. Have that helped you to capture or interpret the messages or the culture better in any ways? Or you know, if it has, like, how has it helped you to do that?
That's a tough one. I think, you know, as artists, we're dealing with, we're creating things that are two-dimensional. You know, we're creating, you know, flat art. And so in a way, you know, what we're really constrained with as artists is what fits in the frame, you know? So I think there's a perspective about the subject matter that like allows me as a photographer, as an artist, to connect with the subject with more love and empathy. But I think, as an artist, a lot of that learning relates to actually like how to tell the story and how to fit what you see and what you want to say within the confines of this of these borders, right? So, I suppose if I was a writer, I might be even more introspective and, having this sort of meditative experience of writing. But as a photographer, it's really given me it's really given me the sort of experience to figure out how to fit the story inside the borders of the frame. So yeah, I think
Yeah,
that's maybe the best way I can put it.
that's such an interesting take, and sometimes this thought just come through my head, so I'm very interested to hear this sort of perspective. You released, I think it was 100 collections of photos in the 90 on your first project, right? And it was called the 96 Degree in the Shade. And then now you have a follow-up from there called The Traces of Truth, which is, I believe, it was 500 works. And you have integrated AI into photography and have used the NFT or the blockchain platform to as the medium to be able to sell your artwork and your collection and your perspective to the world. Now, before we get into all that, I'd like to hear a little bit. What so you have been in photography for a while, working as a photographer. Now, what draw you into the Web3 or the NFT space as a photographer?
Well, I was, I'm very much a technophile. I love new technology. I'm like the first one in line to get the latest iPhone when it comes out. I've always like really looked at technology as just something that could help me do what I'm doing better and more efficiently. And I'm excited to like be always on the bleeding edge of what's coming next. When I heard about this app called Clubhouse, I was, and this was back in the spring of 2021, I was really upset that I didn't get an invitation. And my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, but she got an invitation, and I was like, maybe I can use her phone to like get on Clubhouse and make a profile and everything. And eventually, I mean, within a few weeks, somebody who I didn't even know invited me to the Clubhouse, and I jumped on. And the first like rings that I saw were NFTs, and I was like, "What is this?" And so I just listened. And every day on my way to the office, I put my headphones on and listened to Clubhouse and listened to these people talking about NFTs. And just started investigating it. And that's how I sort of found out about what Web3 was about. And, I desperately wanted to be a part of it, but I wasn't seeing really any photography. So there was a learning process going on while I was trying to figure out whether there was a place there for me.
And so that was so funny. You brought Clubhouse. I think it was very nostalgic. It's where it all started for many of us in the Web3 and the NFT space. Now, when you listen to that and you kind of hear about it, how what's your perspective of the Web3 and how you feel you can fit in or make this technology help you or work with to be able to spread your story, out there in this world.
Well, the funniest thing about Clubhouse was that my first goal was actually to like get on stage and talk, and that was a moment where there were like just a few people, just a few people talking about art and the NFT space, and it was really hard to get on stage. Even if I got on stage, I didn't really know what I was going to talk about. So I was like following people and desperately like trying to be a part of the conversation. But I also then started to jump on OpenSea and look at what kind of NFTs were being sold. And it was a lot of moving picture. It was a lot of 3D animation stuff, and I was like, I don't know how to do this. This isn't really my, you know, this isn't really my genre. I don't know if I can participate. And I somehow found my way onto a podcast with this guy named Gmo, and oh, sorry, no. It was a podcast with Justin Aversano. And Justin, as you probably know, is a, you know, a very well-known photographer in the Web3 space, a young guy, a really beautiful young guy, and just like has a lot of heart, and did this big project called Twin Flames. And it was this, you know, a years-long project of photographing twins around the world. And I was really interested in his, that project hadn't really taken off at that time. I mean, it sort of had, but it wasn't, didn't sort of hit the stratosphere as it did, you know, within 6 months from that time. But Justin was talking about his journey in the NFT space and talked about this guy named Gmo, and who was his first collector and a real supporter of his at the time. So I was like, I took notes. I was like, okay, Gmo, I've got to find this guy. I like write down Justin Aversano. So I found them both on Twitter, and that's how it started. I reached out to them both on Twitter. I must have had like 20 followers at the time, so I like didn't think that either of them were going to get back to me. And Justin, who hadn't started Quantum yet, got back to me, and he said, "Hey man, you know, how can I help?" And I said, "Hey, well, you know, I want to put out this series of photographs, and I would just love to get your input." And so I said, yeah, send me some. So I went back, set up a web page with like 20 pictures from what became 96 Degrees in the Shade. I don't even think it was called that at that time. I don't think I had a title. And I sent him this web page with 20 pictures on it. He was like, oh wow. He's like, I want one. These are really cool. So that was the start for me. And I thought, well, okay, maybe I have something interesting here. And literally like maybe a couple hours later, or maybe it was the next day, Gmo got back to me. And of course I projected that, not projected. I let him know that Justin was really interested in my work, and I probably played it up a little bit, and he must have gone back to Justin to ask him like, who is this guy? What is this? What's his story? And the next day, I was out of town with my girlfriend, and I get this note on Twitter that from Gmo, he was really interested in the work, and so we got on the phone right at that time, and he said, you know, how many pieces are going to be in this collection? And I just remembered that Twin Flames had 100 pieces, so I said, I think 100 pieces, and he said, oh, amazing. He said, I really love what you're doing. What would you think about me buying 20 of those? And well, at that time, I just like, you know, I said to my girlfriend, we got to get home. I got work to do. So that's how it started. So, you know, I mean, this was a real moment of like, sort of, they say that like success equals preparedness plus opportunity. And so I was somewhat prepared because I had some information and I had some pictures that were ready to kind of show somebody, and the opportunity came, and, you know, it sort of just really, really rocketed from there.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I love hearing that. And, you know, massive kudos for you for making that happen. So, tell us a little bit about, you know, what is the 96 Degree in the Shade project? You know, what does it, how did it come together, as a collective, and what it is about?
Well, I was living in Miami Beach at the time. I had left San Francisco, sort of as the .com, era was imploding. Everybody was getting laid off. I was working as a tech in the tech industry as a marketing guy, and eventually led me to this to this photo studio called Blue Sky, and then I had an opportunity to go to Miami, and I took it. And so I was in Miami, and you know, Miami is a really hot place. I mean, you know, I think I went for like 8 or 9 months without putting on a pair of socks. It was just I spent most of the day outside with my camera, most of the time on the beach. And I started meeting a lot of people, and we'd hang out at the beach and start photographing people. And the more people I got to know and the more time I spent, it started to really become, I didn't think of it as a project at the time, but it did become a project. And I slowly started to get some clients in the fashion industry. And so I started, rather than renting a studio for the shoot, I started bringing my clients to the beach, and we would just use the beach as the backdrop. The most beautiful light, really, you can stand by the water and have this incredible like light and incredible background that frames the subject so beautifully. And so that was, so that's sort of how it started. And so many of the people in the collection of 96 Degrees in the Shade were models or other people that were on shoots with me. And other times they were just people who I met at the beach and, you know, just said, "Hey, do you mind if I take a photograph of you?" So so that's sort of how it started. The kind of the magical thing about that is those photographs were taken between 2003 and 2007. And, you know, we know NFTs didn't start until, you know, well, okay, 2017, 2018, but photography in the NFT space didn't start until 2021. So so those pictures were in boxes. It was all shot on film. Most of it shot on a Pentax 6x7 camera with, you know, Kodak BIOX, D-Max 100, 400, sometimes Fuji color film. And so I went through a process of scanning that work as I began to understand what was going on in the NFT space. But, you know, this stuff sat in boxes for, you know, a good 15 years before it came to life as NFT. So I think there's an interesting sort of story there.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. It's crazy how things kind of make a round and, you know, come back to you, isn't it? So that was incredible, you know, to be able to see you're able to put out 100 of that photos out there in the blockchain, and you know, got collected 20 of them right away by G-Money, which is a big collector in the space. And then the next project after that is Traces of Truth, right? If I remember.
Well, there's
that
a few
correctly.
there's a couple in between. There's a couple that I'll talk about a whole lot, but just to end the story about 96 Degrees in the Shade, although I'm sure we'll find a way to get back to it, is that because the Punks Discord was for the Twin Flames, Justin's Twin Flames Discord was just getting started. And there were a lot of his collectors were punks and then Bored Ape collectors. And they were really interested in photography at that time. And when G-Money came in and Justin came in and they were both talking about my project, then the project essentially sold out immediately. And I mean, not on the day that it was released, but what happened was I had really put the cart before the horse here. I had really started getting the collection actually up on OpenSea before all 100 pieces were even like scanned and retouched. So every day, so for 3 days, I was putting up as many pictures as I could. On the first day, I put up 40 pictures and they all sold out within moments of like them getting posted and priced on OpenSea, it would get sold. And then I think what happened was people were basically, they knew about the collection. They were excited about it. They were excited about collecting photography. It was really early days. And they were just refreshing the page. And when a new item was listed, boom, they would just buy it. I didn't even think they were looking at it to see what was the subject matter. So after the first day, all 40 pieces that I had put up sold. Next day, I think 30 pieces. And then the following day, 30 pieces. And they all sold out immediately. And there's just one story about this collection that I really want to put in the podcast because it just was so meaningful to me. And it was just so fantastic. There was a collector whose handle on Twitter is Warren himself, and from Germany. And he's quite a prominent guy in the space now. I didn't really know it at the time, but he was messaging me on Discord, begging me to like tell him when the next pictures were going to be uploaded, because he was trying to get as many pieces as he could from the collection. And there's this passage that I saved on Discord where he said, "Barry, listen, I've taken my laptop to this wedding." He's like, "I'm at a wedding this weekend. I have my laptop open. I'm standing in the parking lot and I'm getting eaten alive by mosquitoes. When are you going to post the next picture?" And I really, really felt bad because I didn't know he had already picked up like 5 or 10 pieces at that time. So I kind of told him like, "Okay, I'm about to put like another 5 or 10 pieces up." So he literally stayed in his parking lot with his laptop. I imagine like the wedding was going on in the background and he was there buying NFTs. I mean, it was so fantastic. It was, the energy was amazing. And Mike and I, his name is Mike, and he and I have become really good friends over the years. And he's one of my biggest collectors now. I wanted to get that story out there because it was so indicative of like the excitement and the passion that collectors are, you know, we're having for photography. I think that's still happening, but maybe in a slightly different moment.
That's probably one of the best feeling, you know, any photographers or even artists, right, could have, is that somebody out there waiting for you and really want to collect that art for what it is, right? Not because, not because this art is made for them, but it's something that's truly represent of who you are, what you believe in, to capture it. And then there are somebody who actually out there wanting it, appreciating it. I think that as an artist, I don't know if there is any better feeling than that, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's really true. I mean, I've told people for many years, I was a soccer player when I was a kid, and there's no feeling. I think there's still no feeling like scoring a goal playing soccer. That to me is like the ultimate. But I think selling, like having somebody appreciate your work and spending their hard-earned money to buy it and being excited about it and tweeting about it and telling other people about it, it really is something. And I have to say that, like, for new photographers who are listening to this, it took me a good 40 years to really like sell photographs in this way. Like, I did not, maybe not 40 years, but it was not something that I've not been part of the gallery system. I don't have a gallery in Chelsea selling my work, wanting to put out the next things. I didn't have a cadre of collectors who were, you know, waiting for the gallery to, you know, put up a new collection of work. I did have my work in a couple of prominent collectors like Calvin Klein and David Geffen, who I'd met over the years, have collected my work, but not to the extent that, you know, that I had a real big audience for it. So NFTs were really the first time that I had an opportunity to grow my collector base and to have this experience of selling work. So, but to fast forward and just to make a bridge to the AI work, I did put out a small collection on Foundation called Paris in the Summer. And it's a collection of 8 photographs I made of Paris Hilton on the beach in Miami at that time. And that was a mix of color and black and white photographs. And there's a long story I could get into about it. Maybe we can get into it another time. But you can find those on Foundation. And that was actually a small collection that I put out after 96 Degrees in the Shade. So There's a couple other small projects that I did, but essentially, I became interested in AI and that's, also an interesting place to sort of segue into.
Yeah, 100%. You had that as a photographers, it's really interesting how you get interested in AI because in a lot of photography, it's as a photographer, AI is being frowned upon in most cases. So, what inspired you to get into AI, and to test it out, to create these collections?
Well, I think my interest in AI really was related to what I've been referring to as the death of truth. And there's a very interesting sort of extension of photography into AI, and I think a lot of photographers, yeah, I understand that a lot of photographers are afraid of what AI might do to their career or to the genre of photography, and I think some of those fears are real, are based on real things happening. I mean, I think in stock photography space, there may be, I mean, there probably will be a very big takeover of the production of AI work. It's pretty easy to represent some of the more sort of banal like scenarios that sort of dominate, the stock photography world. I mean, a landscape might be pretty easy to produce. A picture of a young person eating ice cream might, be something that, you maybe want to move into a different area if you're doing that kind of photography. Some of the general sort of advertising things that advertisers are buying in stock photography might switch over to AI, and I think photographers will either have to become really, really great programmers. I don't mean computer programmers, but sort of prompters to keep that segment of the market. And I think photographers will have a pretty easy way doing that because if you have a photographic eye, you have a really good sense of composition and emotion and this sort of thing. So I'm not so sure that that all of those fears are totally founded because technology's always influenced photography over the years. And if you go back into the history of photography, it's photography sort of at one point supplanted painting as the sort of the ownership of representing truth. And at one time, painters were the ones who could paint a portrait or a landscape and make it very realistic and be a representation of truth. And eventually, photography took that over. And not suggesting that AI is going to take over the domain of truth telling, maybe quite the opposite. But I think with Traces of Truth, I wanted to talk about those things, and so I think the idea for Traces of Truth came before sort of the visual representation of the twins. But I had this idea that showing these two twins together showed both the relationship between like the similarities of their faces and the inherent differences. And so it seemed like a good, it just was a really potent kind of place to start this conversation of what is truth. And and that just manifested in Traces of Truth as a very sort of photographic project. But you can very easily see that the cameras around the next of these twins are not real. And so there's kind of an immediate connection to the work visually, but then I think people, very quickly look at it and say, "Whoa, what is this?"
Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. And how you incorporate the two into visual art and how I suppose storytelling, right? And being able to pass on your your vision or your message that you want to spread to the world. And I really like that. I really like how, you know, how you say at the end of the day, it's just a modality, right? Whether you use a paint, whether you use photography, it's the intention behind it that makes it powerful or important. So that is, I love hearing that. You know, I find that very, very interesting. One thing that I'm interested on is, so we have other modality apart from NFT to sell our artwork, right? We're able to print. I see that you have a few prints there, photo book, and now it's the digital collectibles era where it is possible to sell a digital version of our art as a collection instead of as a stock photo, right? So share with me a little bit from your perspective, how are these different, right? And what makes you excited about the NFT space or having your art in the blockchain compared to having it printed or, you know, in a book or even just sharing it on a social media?
Well, there's a few really, really interesting paths we can go down with this, because I think there's something so important about how photographers now have this opportunity to realize some financial gain from work that's presented in the digital space. You know, there were these years where, you know, as photographers, we were putting our pictures up on blog posts or websites, and there was always this fear of like, well, of somebody stealing your work. So, you know, it's so easy to right click and save something that we started putting watermarks on our pictures. We even started like really defacing the work so that somebody wouldn't want it. You know, like it was just such a strange it was such a strange action that was happening at that time. And we didn't really know, like, how do we present our work in this world? You know, and we, you know, there's code written that doesn't allow you to right click and save, but you can always screenshot. There was really no way of like, and we realized that there was no way of protecting your work necessarily. So, you know, along comes the blockchain and suddenly, you know, collectors are really interested in being like the owner of record of a piece of digital art. And I think that's, you know, such an amazing step in, you know, in photographers' ability to really sell their work and suddenly, like, I think when the blockchain came around, I think I say we, so I'm kind of speaking for a big group, but I should just really say from my own perspective, I'm not so worried anymore about somebody right-clicking and saving my piece. You know, what I do worry about is like somebody scraping a whole collection off of OpenSea and like making a complete collection of like work with my IP. And it happens. It happened on 96 in the Shade. It happened on Traces of Truth. It's happening with Red. And thank you to OpenSea, if you're listening, for being diligent in getting those collections taken down very quickly. So there is still kind of an issue there of, you know, people stealing your IP. But now that we have an opportunity to look at it in a different way and to to have collectors buying your work and being the owner of record on the blockchain, which is, you know, immutable and maybe forever, I don't know, maybe until quantum computing comes around, but this is a really interesting thing, I think, for photographers. And for me, like having this work that, for example, sat in a box for 15, 18 years before it like had a new life on the blockchain, really made me realize that like, even if I were to lose those negatives and lose those prints, that it still exists. And it who knows how long it's going to exist on the blockchain, but it gives it another life and it gives it another place to live. in the digital world. So I'm super excited about that part of it. I know there were a few different things that were built into that question. So yeah, so sorry if you want to kind of repeat where what that
No,
question was. I'm happy to take the other parts of it, but yeah, that's the exciting part for
100%.
me.
I think that is a really good answer. I think when you mentioned, right clicking, we're scared that people are right clicking, saving it and sharing it somewhere else. Well, as once we put it out there as a record of NFT, we no longer are afraid as much. And I think this is the first time in the history where an art became more valuable when there are a lot more people using it, right, in the background. And a good example was when Kath Simard releases, that photo as an open public license where anyone could, she just got tired of that photo being stolen all the time. She just go, you know what, this is open for public. And this is what, I love what you said there, because that is so very true. I have never in my photography life, be any happier than people try to right click and save, because it actually increases the value of that particular, art in that blockchain. So, very,
right.
Very interesting. How has the Web3 or the NFT changed your life, if it has, or has it been just one of those new technology like iPhone that, just okay, well, it's just another way of communicating, or has it create a new impact and a new way you go about pursuing storytelling and sharing your art to the world?
Well, I think it hasn't. Let me not answer this too quickly. I'll say from the storytelling perspective, it hasn't changed my ideas of storytelling. But I think, what it first did is it opened my work to a whole new world of collectors, and that's just a miracle, I think. Of the space, because there were a small number of people who knew about the work that I was doing. My primary job, I actually have a job. I run the fashion photography graduate department at School of Visual Arts in New York City, and this is still the main focus of my work life. I work with 15 to 20 students every year on building an art practice around the context, in the context of fashion, and have a wonderful staff and a wonderful group of teachers who all work in the industry, and we're all really focused on helping young photographers to advance their careers and to become, better at the craft. So this, my participation in the NFT space has really just given me an opportunity to get new collectors to look at my work. And it has changed my life. I mean, both financially and sort of from the standpoint of I'll back up a little bit. When you put out a collection, either in a gallery or in the NFT space, it gives you time to reflect on sort of where you're going next. And, because you sort of like, projects have like a beginning, a middle, and an end. And sort of for me, and well, this is opening up a whole new conversation, but once a collection is launched, of course, as an artist, you're thinking about what to do next. The truth is, there's a whole life to the work and to the sort of process that actually just starts when your work is launched on the blockchain. So, I now have a Discord. I now have, collectors that, I'm building relationships with. Everybody wants to know what's coming next. In a very... one of the new experiences for me as a creator is that now there's a bunch of collectors who are also looking at the value of what they bought, and they might be buying it because they love the art. They might be buying it to flip and make a quick, you know, a quick buck, or they may be buying it as a long-term investment. But there's this relationship that's happening, a whole new set of expectations. And so while that is going on, of course, as a creator, I'm thinking about, you know, what to do next. And so this has led into, you know, sort of a renaissance, I think, of creativity. So yeah, I just think that, yeah, the attention that's being put on photography, the speed at which this stuff is going out, is really, yeah, I think as a creator, it's a time in my life as a creator that's never been so exciting and fruitful in terms of like production. I think I've probably produced more work in the last few years than I have, you know, in the previous like 20.
Yeah, wow. You know, I love hearing that. You know, I think you're absolutely right in terms of renaissance. I think this is the new era of art, you know, and there's just so many possibilities that this can go. So very excited about this, you know. Big congratulations on the work that you have done and the success that you have gone through. I think your work are absolutely incredible, and I love the concept behind them as well, you know, the purpose behind them. I see that, you know, not all projects in the blockchain have a purpose or a story behind it. And I see that when I go through, you know, the stories and your collection, I can see that, you know, coming true. So yeah, big congratulations for
you.
Now, what's next? If it's possible to reveal, if it's not, it's okay as well, you know. But is there anything in the horizon? You just said that, you know, as soon as there's a project finished, the next exciting things is thinking about the next bit. But is there any next project in the horizon at the moment?
Well, I think before I get to what's next, which I don't know if there might, I don't know if there's going to be an acceptable answer to that, you know, what I'm focused on right now is this project RAD, that was launched on June 26th. And this is a collection of 600 works of synthetic photography. Some people call it post photography, some just call it AI. It is, you know, essentially AI assisted images that largely come from training the AI on a data set of my own photography. And it's actually the true sort of extension of 96 Degrees in Shade, because the first collection in the series starts out with the sort of this subculture of beachgoers. And so there's a collection within RAD. There's five different sub-collections: The Beach, Easy Rider, Hot Wheels, Ravers, and Punks. And this is essentially an exploration of youth culture across a number of different sort of, you know, subsections. And that's been the focus of my, you know, of my work really over, I would say, the past year. But that was just launched, so I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty deeply entrenched in, you know, in showing that work and in getting that out there, because it's very much sort of an extension of my exploration of youth culture, but now in this new storytelling genre of AI.
Yeah, no, that's really exciting. You know, I love how you connect the two, and then, you know, you experimented with a different way to approach it. I think that's really cool. That's really interesting on how that is, how you take that forward. Well, Barry, I really appreciate having you here. And, you know, it's been a great conversation. I know you have a meeting to run to, so I want to make sure that we wrap it up before you have to rush out. But before we go, I want to have one last question. And this is a question that I always ask every guest in my podcast, which is, what would be the one advice that you would either, you know, give yourself, your younger self, give yourself today, or other people, whether it's about photography, life, whatever it may be? Have you got this one advice that, you know, you live through by, that you, is that even the right way of saying that you live by it, right? throughout your life, and become your North Star?
I think what's happening, I'm going to put this sort of in the context of this new NFT space. I think, you know, what's happening in the conversations in the NFT space and on Twitter are very focused on the transactional nature of selling work. And, you know, I think I would implore young photographers not to be sort of sidetracked by these conversations and this transactional approach. NFTs, I don't think, are going away. Blockchain, I don't think, is going away. Certainly anytime soon, I don't think it's going to go away in our lifetime. You have plenty of time. I think, you know, focus on your craft. I think there's a real, when we were talking about this earlier before we started, it's really easy to misinterpret what's happening on the transactional side of NFTs, and you know, see this artist that you don't know, and they just showed up on the scene, and all of a sudden they've sold out their collection, and you know, they bought a Tesla, and you know, or like going on vacations, and thinking like, oh yeah, man, I want to do that too, you know? And yes, if your work is ready to show, by all means, go for it, you know? But I think there's a lot of really exciting things happening in the NFT space, and this big sort of community of artists that are coming together in a way that's supportive and that's helping us. It's helping me grow my, you know, understanding of my work and of myself. And, you know, my advice is take advantage of that. Don't worry whether your NFTs or whether your pieces are selling as NFTs or not. Just like build your community, hang out with artists, spend all day and all night with artists, and you know, be a part of a community. That will help you like focus on your craft more than anything. And you know, if a time comes that like you're able to sell some work and you know, buy a new camera, or you know, best case scenario, make a living, and you know, and all of that, that's wonderful. But like, these things generally take time, so give yourself time. Don't, you know, it doesn't have to happen overnight. I think that's the best advice that I can give you.
That is amazing. I love that advice, Barry, because you know, I feel like a lot of this conversation around you know, we started photography or in art, in artists in most cases want to become an artist because they love what they do, right? I don't know if there is any artists that have started becoming an artist because they feel like they can make a lot of money from it. I feel like, you know, it's always because they fell in love with it. It's not like, you know, an investment banking or something like that. But I feel like as we grow into this path of, you know, pursuing that full, doing more of art, being able to do more of what we love by having more money, sometimes we get distracted and even lost our purpose on why we started our, you know, photography or becoming an artist in the first place. So
yeah,
I love what you said there. I totally resonate with that. You know, we know how important money is, but if it means that you're going to lose your passion, your love for your art, then is it really worth it, right? So thanks for the advice. Yeah. I think that's a really, really good advice to have.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when I was a young artist, there was no like sort of interconnected community like there is now on Twitter and social and around art practice. So, you know, take advantage of that. Be a member of that community and get better at your craft. Talk about your craft night and day. You know, get people to look at your work and help you critique it. Critique other people's work. Learn the language of critique. Get to know yourself better through that whole process. And, you know, that will help your work. And if there is some financial gain at the end of, you know, at the end of that road, that's icing on the cake. But I think, like, sometimes as artists, we think that we have the right to have some kind of financial success. And, you know, the truth is, like, if you're a real artist, you're doing that so you can live. You know, you're doing that because you're possessed by this, you know, need to create. And I think, you know, I think young artists should really tap into that energy and that fire. And, you know, that's the most rewarding part, I think, of being an artist.
100%. Well, thanks, Raul, Barry. You know, it's been really, really nice conversation. Love hearing your journey, your story, you know, over the past 3 decades that got you to where you are today. You know, that most people see it as an overnight success, probably, who have come across you recently. But
yeah, know, this, didn't have, this didn't happen overnight.
That's awesome. All right. So, you know, for those of you, for the audience who want to connect with you, find more about your work, what is the best way to connect with you? I know I'm going to put it all in the notes anyway, but let us know what is the best way to connect and get to know you better.
Oh, sure. Thanks for asking. Yeah, you can connect with me on Twitter. Barry L. Sutton is on my Twitter handle. If you get to Twitter, there's also a link to my Discord. Pop in. We have a load of great artists in the Discord you can connect with, and collectors popping in and out. And yeah, all in good fun. And you know, I'm pretty responsive on Twitter right now. I don't have enough followers that that I'm ignoring my DM. So yeah, just jump in and be a part of the community. It would be great to have you.
Fantastic. Yeah, look, one of the things that I love about the Web3 or the NFT space is that, you know, we could be a total stranger and then, you know, like just like this, we sit on that podcast, get to know each other. Well, as in the old days, it was a lot more difficult, you know, I find even to collaborate, work with each other, you know, reach out each other, is ask for advice, just like you said, you know, like Twitter is just incredible. Like people really responsive, really respond. It doesn't matter how many followers they have, you know, it's been a lot. It's been a really refreshing place to be. So I really appreciate you, you know, with checking your DM, coming back to me after, you know, in a few days, we are recording this podcast. So very excited to get your words out, your stories out there and your and as well as your work. Well, thanks a lot, Barry, for being in this podcast. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to photographers about the work. I really appreciate you reaching out, and yeah, great conversation.
Fantastic. Well, Wiki Hunters, thanks a lot for tuning in, and make sure that you check out what the project that Barry have put together. It's absolutely incredible, both from his photography as well as the AI part of it. And that's just goes to show how they both can work next to each other if we decide to do so. So I think there's a lot of excitement with the technology that's happening in this world with AI, with the Web3, with the blockchain. And when we use it to our advantage, I think that's where we can get the most out of it. Well, thanks a lot for tuning in. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. If you haven't already done so, go to Twitter, follow Barry if you haven't done so, and I'll see you guys next week.